We just start in a couple of minutes.
सदाशिवसमारंभां शंकराचार्यमध्यमां अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वंदे गुरुपरंपरां ओम।
So today we are going to discuss a very very important subject, which is Atma. Before we move on to the subject proper, let's do a quick recap. Until now, we dealt with the following topics from Tattva Bodha. I'm not talking about the first four or five sessions that we did. Thereafter, we moved to Tattva Bodha. And in Tattva Bodha, we looked at Sadhana Chatushtayam, the fourfold qualifications, right, required for a spiritual journey, right? And then we also saw, we got into the details of, you know, how the body or the jiva is itself analyzed in the shastras. And then we looked at shariratrayam, right, the three bodies, sthula, sukshma, karana, shariram. And for each one of these, we saw the raw materials, you know, required for each of these shariram, the function, the components, the nature itself, and the lifespan. So shariratrayam we saw in detail, which is nothing but the physical body or sthula shariram. Then we also, shariratrayam has sthula shariram, sukshma shariram and karana shariram. So that was the first kind of categorization that we saw. Then the second kind of categorization we saw was the avastatrayam, which is the three different states, right? We discussed in detail about how people function in the waking state, Jagrat Avastha, then the dream state, which is Swapna Avastha, and then of course deep sleep state or Sushupti Avastha. We saw this in detail, and then after that we went to Kosha Panchakam or Panchakosham. Panchakosham is another way of looking at Shariratrayam only, but the big difference was with respect to the subcategorization and classification of the sukshma shariram itself into three different components called manomaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, and before that pranamaya kosha. So we saw panchakoshakam, annamaya kosha, then the three belonging to sukshma shariram, and then the last one, which is anandamaya kosha. So we saw panchakosha, we also saw shariratrayam, we saw avastatrayam, right? And I said there is a reason for which Shastra is actually introducing us to this subject this way, right? And so I introduced the concept of Atma or the definition of Atma. But we will see more about it today as we move deeper into this subject, right? Now, Atma or Atman, from a Sanskrit perspective, yes, it makes a difference, Atman and Atma. But for us, for the purpose of introductory course on Vedanta, we can refer to it as Atma, right? Atma, or in English, people generally translate as soul. But in accordance with the parampara that Swamiji and Pujya Swamiji have followed, I would prefer sticking to the term Atma and not soul, because Atma is beyond, much more meaningful and has a very loaded meaning as compared to an ordinary translation, soul. So we will stick to Atma, right? Now, from the previous topics, we already came to know that we have three bodies, Shariratrayam, and they are made up of matter. So if you remember, we discussed in detail about the gross elements, Pancha Bhutani, right? We said the gross body is made up of Pancha Bhutani, right? And then we also said that and anything that is material, right, we call it as Bhautikam. So matter is Bhutam, material is Bhautikam. So the Sthula Shariram is Pancha Bhautikam or material in nature. Now we also saw that Sukshma Shariram or subtle body is also made up of subtle elements called Pancha Bhautikam, right? Only thing is they are more sukshmam or subtle as compared to the stula shariram, right? And then we saw that even causal body or karana shariram is the subtlest form of matter only, right? So we also said that causal body is the one in which the potential shariram exists. That is also a form of matter or material. Only thing is it is more subtle in nature. So what are we arriving at now? Shariratrayam is material in nature. So in Sanskritam, it is jadam, right? Matter is called jadam, right? So all that we have seen so far is jadam. Shariratrayam is jadam. It is made up of inert matter, right? And once we understand these three shariram's are jadam, we have to derive certain very, very important corollaries. Any matter or material is inert in nature, therefore we termed it jadam. Now, according to Vedanta Shastra, the definition of inertness is that which doesn't have consciousness. So, definition of inertness is which doesn't have consciousness and that which cannot produce consciousness. Both are important, right? In Sanskritam, we say it is neither Chaitanya Gunakam nor Chaitanya Janakam. So it is neither having consciousness of its own nor can it produce consciousness. Now this is the biggest difference. Shastra strongly believe that the Shariratrayam, which is Jadam, cannot produce consciousness. Science may think otherwise, right? Now, and since Shariratrayam is Jadam or material in nature, it doesn't have consciousness, right? It doesn't produce consciousness, and therefore, according to Shastra, all these three Shariram's by nature are insentient, right? Intrinsically, they do not have consciousness, right? Which means not only the body is inert and insentient, very important point, according to Shastra, the mind also, which is part of Sukshma Shariram, is also made up of inert matter and therefore insentient. Therefore, according to Vedanta, mind doesn't have its own consciousness. Mind cannot produce consciousness also. Please follow the development very carefully. Stula, Sukshma, Karana, Shariram, all three are insentient according to Shastra. They are all made up of matter or material born out of Pancha Bhautikam. Therefore, they cannot produce consciousness, nor do they have consciousness inherently. Right? Very important to follow till this stage, right? So, this is the corollary that we get from the study of the three bodies, right? Very, very important, inclusive of Karana Sharira, right? So, all three bodies are intrinsically insentient. Now, moving on. So, if three bodies must be insentient and logically, suppose I am experiencing that the body is conscious, right? We are experiencing that the body is conscious, right? How do you reconcile these two, right? Vedanta Shastra says this is possible. Suppose you know that a person is extremely poor and he comes to a particular function with lot of, you know, ornaments, coat, suit, boot, etc. What is the conclusion that we will arrive at? Since he does not own any of these and he is still wearing them, they must be borrowed. Very simple, right? Similarly, a person is not so good looking, right? But he or she looks beautiful and made up, right? And they obviously the person looks really beautiful and made up. So, what do we know from that? That this person does not have beauty or these kind of features on his or her own. This is acquired through putting up some makeup or facial, right? So, you know that there is a borrowed aspect when something is not inherently present. So, what are we arriving at? Shastram is pointing out that Shariratrayam does not have Swabhavika Chaitanyam. It doesn't have natural consciousness. Therefore, they have Agantuka Chaitanyam, incidental or borrowed consciousness. And with borrowed consciousness, these three Shariram are strutting about like a peacock very proudly. Otherwise, there is no difference between the statues that are present on the road and our physical body. That is also made up of chemicals. Our body is also made up of chemicals. So from the Shastric angle, we say Panchabhutas. And from scientific angle, we say body is made up of chemicals. It's just biochemistry, right? However, it is enjoying borrowed consciousness. So we have to watch the stages of development very carefully. First we said, Shariratrayam Bhautikam. Therefore, Shariratrayam Jadam. And then we are saying they appear as though sentient. And therefore, Shariratrayam has borrowed consciousness, right? Now, continuing further here, we will say, if Shariratrayam can borrow consciousness, borrowing is possible only when there is a lender. So, if you have to take something, like Swamiji says, Lena bank, then we need a Dena bank that will give, right? So, we require a consciousness Dena bank, which has to lend the consciousness, and this lender of consciousness is the fourth factor in human personality. This lender of consciousness is the fourth factor beyond the three factors that we already saw. Stula, Sukshma, Karana, Sharira, Vyatiriktaha, there is a fourth aspect which is consciousness, right? And that has been lent, right? Other than the DC factors, there is a fourth factor which is actually lending the consciousness to the Shariratrayam. Very, very important aspect, right? Now, the fourth factor. Who is the lender of this consciousness? We say Atma, right? The lender of the consciousness is Atma, right? So, the fourth factor in human personality, which is the lender of consciousness to the first three factors, that is Shariratrayam, is Atma. Now, if we have to give some nearest example so that you can relate, it is like the electricity that makes a bulb glow with light or brilliance. Because you know that the bulb cannot glow by itself, you know the filament cannot glow by itself. Therefore, other than the bulb and the filament, there is another principle called electricity which makes the filament glow first, and through the filament it will make the bulb also brilliant, right? Now, the only thing is the electricity part is invisible, right? The glowing filament and bulb alone is visible. Thus, the visible bulb and filament are made glowing because of the invisible electricity blessing this bulb. Similarly, in the room, you will have small bulbs, big bulbs, right? Some colored ones, some different ones. So, you will see the luminosity and the brilliance changing, but electricity remaining the same, right? So, this invisible principle is called Atma, and this Atma makes the Shariratrayam alive with consciousness, and it makes Shariratrayam sentient with consciousness. Very, very important aspect. Okay. So, Kena Upanishad actually says, now we have to find out what is the nature of this Atma. So, the Upanishad begins with this question. Keneshitam patati preshitam manaha, kena pranaha pratamaha praiti yuktaha, keneshitam vachamimam vadanti chakshushrotram kau devo yunakti. Right? Willed by whom does the mind fall on objects, or is it force? Directed by whom does the main prana or the mukhya prana function? Willed by whom do the people speak words? Which effulgent principle indeed directs the eyes and ears? Then the Upanishad goes on to explain a lot about Atma and consciousness, etc. This is how Kena Upanishad introduces the subject, right? So, once again, revisiting this definition so that we remember, don't get too worried. There are still some aspects of this which I have not explained. I'm coming to that. Stula sukshma karana sharira vyatiriktaha pancha koshatitaha san avastatraya sakshi sachidananda swarupaha san yattishtati sa atma. That which is different from stula sukshma karana shariram, which is transcended the panchakoshas, which is the witness of the avastatrayam. It is of the nature of Sat Chit and Ananda. What remains or what stands testimony or aware as awareness stands across all of this is Atma. Okay, moving on. Now we are going to see some very, very important aspects of Atma, right? Now, one of the first and fundamental aspects of Atma is Atma Chaitanya Swarupam. Atma is of the nature of consciousness itself. It's a non-material principle. Why do we say so? Because if Atma is also another matter, what will happen? It will have to go to something else to get consciousness. Now, if it goes on, you know, continuing to be matter, then it will have to ultimately find a original lender, which is of the nature of consciousness, right? So, therefore, Atma is that original lender, which is non-material in nature. And that is why we use the word spirit in English. But as I said, we will continue to use the word Atma. So, Atma is the non-material principle, the spiritual principle of the nature of consciousness. Chaitanya Swarupaha or Chidrupaha, right? So, this word you would have heard in prayer verses, we normally use the word without knowing the meaning. We say Chidrupi, Paradevata, Bhagavati, Sri Raja Rajeshwari, Lalita Sahasranamam, and many places this comes, right? So, it's nothing but Chaitanya Swarupam. That's the first one, the important one, right? Now, then, Atma or the real I is of the nature of consciousness which makes the body sentient, right? It makes this bundle of matter called the body alive, right? Sentient means what? Capable of feeling the surrounding, right? Which makes the body different from an, say, an inert desk or an inert chair. The body is also made up of chemicals, but this is different from the desk because it is blessed by Atma, right? Now, the next logical question would be, what is this consciousness, right, which makes the body sentient, right? Now, we have to remember now that Shruti is an independent pramanam, right? In case you all want to go back and check, this was discussed in the talk 4 in slide 28, saying Shruti is an independent pramanam. We said under Pratyaksha pramanam, eyes cannot study themselves, right? All Paurusheya Pramanas, the 5 instruments, right, are inadequate to give me self-knowledge. I discussed this in detail, right? And we need a 6th Pramana to study the self, and that is Shastra Pramana. It is an Apaurusheya Pramanam, and I also said that we don't validate Shruti with any of the other Pramanams because each Pramanam is independent. I'm just trying to recollect so that you can go back and check this out. Therefore, we have to take some of the things that Shastra has said with Shraddha, right? Very, very important. So, Vedanta analyzes the nature of this consciousness and we have to understand the fundamental principles regarding the nature of this consciousness. The first lesson we have to remember is consciousness is not a property of the body or a product, right? According to Vedanta, unlike height, weight, complexion, etc., which are properties of the body, sentiency or consciousness is not the property of the body. Similarly, Vedanta says consciousness is not a part of the body also, right? Having understood that, we can say that consciousness is not generated in the body or the brain like enzymes are being produced or blood is being produced. No, right? Because Vedanta is very clear that it is not even a product generated by the brain. Brain cannot generate consciousness. Body cannot generate life by itself, right? And therefore, in short, life principle is not a product of matter. So, the first important lesson is that consciousness is not a part, nor a product, nor a property, nor a product of the body. The 5 slides that are following from here may be used for Nididhyasanam when a person is actively pursuing Vedanta, you know, Shravanam, Mananam, etc., right? So, whenever they are going through the Vedanta studies, these 5 slides can be used, 1 to 5, which are following, right? We generally use it during meditation. Okay, the second lesson is consciousness is an invisible and independent entity which pervades the body and makes it alive, right? Now, again, the nearest example for this is electricity, which we already saw, right? So, the electricity is invisible, but it makes the fans run, it makes the bulbs glow, etc., right? So, similarly, this bundle of matter called Shariratrayam is alive and kicking because of the invisible principle called consciousness. So, the second lesson is consciousness is an invisible and independent entity which pervades the body and makes it alive. The third one, right? Now, this invisible independent consciousness is not limited or circumscribed by or confined to the boundaries of the body. Okay, what does this mean? Now, just like electricity is not confined to the boundaries of the fan, bulb, etc., Vedanta says consciousness is boundless, limitless, dimensionless, which means it has no height, weight, length. It is beyond all these. All these height, weight, etc. belong to the body, and just as the length belongs to the blades of the fan and not to the electricity. So the third lesson is that consciousness has no boundaries. It is all pervading or limitless. So it is not limited by space. If you have any questions in your mind, just wait. We'll get clarified in the subsequent slides. This invisible independent consciousness will continue to survive even after the body medium dies, perishes, or is destroyed. Very, very critical point, right? It is not space-wise limited was the third lesson. It is not time-wise limited is the fourth lesson. Bhagavan Krishna explains this in the Bhagavad Gita, and also it is originally found in Kathopanishad. Gita is obviously borrowed from Kathopanishad. Na jayate mriyate va kadachit nayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuyaha ajo nitya shashvatoyam puranaha na hanyate hanyamane sharire. So Krishna tells Arjuna, this atma is neither born at any time nor does it die. It will neither come to existence nor will it disappear again. It is birthless, deathless, decayless and growthless. It is not affected when the body is affected, right? So the fourth lesson is that this invisible independent consciousness will continue to survive even after the body medium dies, perishes or is destroyed, right? Like even after the destruction of, say, a bulb and the light, the fan rotation may stop or the bulb may not work, but the electricity continues to be present in the circuit. Similarly, even after the body dies, the consciousness continues to exist. It is therefore a permanent, eternal principle. So it is not limited by time also. It is not limited by space. It is not limited by time. After death, the surviving consciousness cannot be contacted by us or recognized by us, not because it is not present, but because the medium of the body no longer exists. After death, right? Note, the surviving consciousness cannot be contacted by us, not because it is not present, but because the medium of the body through which it needs to interact is no longer existing. This is a very, very important lesson, right? So, the surviving consciousness after the fall of the body is unrecognizable, right? But for argument's sake, if one says, oh, I can recognize electricity by putting my fingers in, right? The answer would be that one has to obviously switch on also, right? So, there is something that makes it evident. So, if the body is not there, the consciousness is unrecognizable. So, in the absence of the body, the consciousness is unrecognizable but not non-existent. Very, very important, right? So, now, what is Shastra wanting us to do? Even after death, the Atma survives, right? That is why it is called Chitrupaha, which means of the nature of consciousness, right? So, the Tattva Bodha author or the Shastras want us to claim the consciousness as I, the self. I said we have four factors, Shariratrayam and Atma, right? So, Shastra wants us to claim the Atma. By using the word Atma, which means self, the author wants that, the Tattva Bodha author wants that we should train ourselves to claim this consciousness as I am. All along, we have wrongly learned to claim this body as I. We have wrongly learned to claim the prana, the mind, the intellect, etc. as I. Right? We've all along been the victims of wrong conditioning. The author says, Tattva Bodha author very clearly says that we should no longer claim that body as I. Instead, we should learn to claim the inner, immortal, invisible essence. That is the consciousness as I. So, I am the consciousness temporarily possessing the body. The body will come and go. Na jayate mriyate. That is what is said there. I will survive forever. The physiological system, my intellect, everything can disappear. But I, the consciousness, will continue to survive. During sleep, the mind may dissolve, but I survive. My intellect may disappear in coma. I may stop thinking. Already it might have stopped for various reasons, right? If people are not, you know, using their intellect, using their mind, right? That is not what we're referring to. There could be a physical disorder, or in sleep we could have the mind get resolved, right? But still, I, the consciousness, is ever present and I know that as a fact. Therefore, I am Jnana Swarupaha, because I know that as a fact, right? And Atma refers to self. Now, this is a long journey. It is not that simple, right? So, net-net, Atma, right, is of the form of consciousness, which we just now saw. And the second aspect, right, is that it is Sat, eternal or Satyam. What does this mean? We have seen that consciousness does not die when the body dies. It is eternally present. It was present in the past, it is present now, and it will be present in the future also. The body arrives and departs, but not this consciousness. In Sanskrit, whatever is eternal is called Sat or Satyam. So, consciousness being eternal is called Sat. This is the meaning of, they say, Kalatraye api tishtati or Trikale api tishtati iti Sat. Trikalam means the three periods of time, the past, present and the future, right? So, it is not the body or the mind, but it is the invisible independent consciousness. So, Atma is not only Chitrupaha, but it is also Satrupaha. And the third aspect is Ananda, right? Limitless happiness or bliss. So, as we have seen even earlier, we might have even studied, right? Consciousness is, even now we saw, consciousness not limited, right? Which means it is not bounded. Now, this is a very, very subtle point. Now, in Sanskritam, all-pervading principle is called Anantaha, right? Now, Anantaha means boundless or limitless, right? To use another Vedantic expression, it is Purnaha. So, something that is Anantaha, unlimited, limitless, is Purnaha, meaning full and complete. This Purnatvam or limitlessness is always experienced in the form of Ananda. Right? So, Ananta, Purnaha, and then Purnatvam or limitlessness is experienced in the form of Ananda, because whenever our mind is full and we don't lack anything, we have a sense of completeness. Only when we lack something, it is expressed as sorrow, right? Therefore, when you are limitless, it means that you have Ananda. I don't miss anything in life. I don't lack anything in life, right? So, I am, as Atma, I am limitless. I am Purnaha, complete in myself. Lord Krishna, in fact, tells in the Gita, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan atmanya atma atmana tushtaha sthita prajnasya dyochate. He says a sthita prajna is one who has a stable mind or an equanimous mind because he has claimed Atma as himself, right? Now, claiming this is not a one day or one hour process. The knowledge can come immediately, but because of our habitual problem of associating with samsara and this body, it will take us years or months or janmas of nididhyasanam to get here, right? So, therefore, the Tattva Bodha author concludes by saying, evam sachidananda swarupam swatmanam vidaniyat. So, please understand, may you recognize this Atma as yourself, which is Sat Chit Ananda Swarupam, the eternal, all-pervading, invisible, inner essence, which is absolute bliss, right? That is Atma, the definition. Now, just quickly going through a few other important points. Now, since this non-material consciousness is called Atma, the material Shariratrayam is called Anatma. Not only the material Shariratrayam is called Anatma, we also refer to the world in general, family, possessions, profession, right? Shariratrayam, everything as Anatma. Everything other than Atma, we refer as Anatma, right? So, understanding that there are three factors within Anatma range and one factor known as Atma, and I, the individual, now I'm talking of the body-mind complex, I'm a mixture of material anatma and non-material atma, right? Learning this is the first lesson of Vedanta, right? Now, for further appreciation of Vedanta, we have to go through some exercise because it is not that easy to understand this, right? We have to go through some exercises, right? So, we have to start claiming this self and getting used to it, right? So, Upanishads or Vedanta teaches that we should gradually train to renounce our identification with the material, perishable, incidental, anatma aspect. So, disidentifying from anatma and learning to identify with atma is the training that is required by Vedantic seekers, right? Now, the regular biodata is fine for worldly transactions, but when, as Swamiji says, you are in the green room, when you are practicing Nididhyasanam, when you are dwelling in the self, the points that we just discussed, starting with consciousness itself, and then, you know, it's not a part or product of property of the body, those five slides, regularly we have to dwell on the teaching so that we do not miss the point in and through our daily life, which is full of ups and downs, right? And ahankara, mamakara, etc. So, the training is actually for us to disidentify from anatma and learning to identify with the atma, right? Now, there are different methods that the Vedanta employs. So, we'll just see a few simple ones. There is a technique, right? Now, there is a method called Drik Drishya Viveka. Drishya Viveka. This is a technique to be used to claim the invisible consciousness as oneself. This is a very, very useful technique, right? According to this technique, we are different from whatever we experience. Whatever we claim as mine only belongs to us. So, whatever belongs to me is not myself, but different from myself. So, if something belongs to me, it is not me, right? You have to dwell on this, right? For example, we experience an object, say a pen. The pen is the object of our experience. The I in us is the subject of experience. This I is different from the experienced pen. Now it is easy to relate. I am different from this experienced pen, right? First thing. Now if you start applying this principle and start negating whatever we experience, we will be left only with I, which is the subject of experience. Right? How do we negate? Right? For each experience, we question, is this an object or subject of experience? If the answer is that this is an object, we conclude that I am not this. This is called neti neti method, right? I am not this, I am not this. So you keep on, you say, I am not the body, right? Because the body is experienced by us, right? We intimately experience the body in the waking state. We experience another body in the dream state, and we experience no body in the sleep state, right? So the body is something that we experience in all the states, and therefore I is not the body, right? Then we also say lot of emotions, right? We say, I am restless, right? I am happy, I am jealous, I am compassionate, right? Now, actually, where are we experience these emotions? In the mind. So, and therefore, we can say, I am not the mind also, right? Similarly, we experience knowledge. We know what we know. We experience ignorance also. Therefore, we can say, I am not the intellect. I am not ignorant. I am not the intellect. Then we go on negating, right? Now, finally, what happens? We have negated everything and we have come to a blank state. So we ask the question, is this blankness experienced or not, right? We are able to talk of blankness only because we are able to experience it. And that is the consciousness principle, because of which even the blankness is known. Sarva abhava sakshi, right? I slept peacefully. I did not know anything. I was blissfully unaware, we say, right? That is what? Being aware of blankness. So, sakshi means witness, the experience of everything, including the absence of even thought, total blankness, right? I am that chitrupa, right? This is neti neti method, right? So, to demonstrate this, the author used this method of claiming that everything, anything that belongs to me is not mine, right? In the shastras, people generally start with external objects. Then we say, they talk about earrings, bangle, right? Kataka kundala, etc. And then after that, they will come to the madhyam shariram. Then they will say, okay, body is heavy. Then they will talk about the mind, then intellect, like that, right? So we will keep on negating everything. And then we say, I am different from whatever I experience. This is law number one, right? Now we just covered the reason why we say that I am different from whatever I experience. I, the experiencer, is the subject, and therefore, right, I am experiencing the objects around me. So that is law number one, right? And the second law, right, I, the experiencer, very important, I'm free from the attributes of the experienced object. Very, very important. Now, I am not the pen, so I don't have pen's attributes. Very easy to relate when it comes to the external objects. But similarly, when we come to each of the panchakoshas, etc., now the disturbance belongs to the mind. It does not belong to me. The sadness belongs to the mind, right? The anger belongs to the mind. It does not belong to me. When I say me here, the I, the self, right? So, I, the experiencer, I'm free from the attributes of the experienced object. Now, this can be very heavy for an introductory session, but there is a whole lot of Shruti, Shastras, etc., which do this very, very gradually, and they take you in steps over years with Shravanam, Mananam, repeated Shravanam, Mananam, and Nididhyasanam. You will be able to get to this state. Right? And while we talk about this, what happens is we negate. I told you we negate. I'm not the body. I'm not the mind, etc. So you might have heard of this famous shloka. It is called Nirvana Shatkam, right? Mano Buddhya Hankara Chittani Naham Nacha Shrotra Jihve Nacha Grana Netre Nacha Vyoma Bhumihi Na Tejo Na Vayuhu Chidananda Rupaha Shivoham Shivoham. Now, these are some of the shlokas that are said with meaning, understanding, and you know, so that you can delve in the teaching and claim the Chidananda Rupaha, right? So, this is from Nirvana Shatkam. Now, let's quickly go over the features of Atma, right? Now, Atma Chaitanya Swarupaha, we saw first one, right? We dealt with it in detail. second one we saw was Atma Swatantraha, right? Why Swatantraha? Because it is nature of consciousness and it does not depend on matter for its production or existence. So therefore it is Swatantraha or independent principle. Now third one is, since Atma, right, is non-material in nature, it does not have any of the attributes belonging to the matter. In fact, whatever attributes we know, they are all material attributes, either perceived directly by our eye or perceived through various instruments, right? All attributes belong to the matter, like Shabda, Sparsha, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha, they all belong to the five elements, Akasha, Vayu, Agni, Apa and Prithvi. The five elements and their elements, elementals or Bhautikam, have attributes like Shabda, Sparsha, etc. But Atma is free from all these attributes and therefore Atma is Nirgunaha. Atma is Nityaha or eternal, right? Atma is Nityaha. We saw that it continues to survive even after the drop of the body. We saw that in the fourth property or fifth property, right? And Atma Sarvagataha. So we saw that Atma is Nityaha and space-wise, time-wise, it is not bound. And then obviously if it is not bound space-wise, it is Sarvagataha or Sarvavyapi. And it is behind all the Sharira Trayams. Very, very important. So, Atma is behind all the Sharira Trayams. So, as many bodies are there, shapes are there, like just the big bulb and small bulb. You have ant, you have elephant, you can have small elephant, you can have human being, you can have anything, right? Atma is Sarvagataha, blessing all of these Sharira Trayams, right? So, the claiming of this, right, is my birthright, right? To claim this Atma rather than get associated with the body-mind complex or the Sharira Trayam is our birthright. And Vedanta says that, right? This is only the first lesson, right? Now the question is, how can I train myself, right? That is the long length, the study of Vedanta, right? But claiming this is what we are supposed to do because it is our real nature. And Atma Ekaha non-dual. It is the same Atma which is blessing all the Sharira Trayam. Just hold on, this is an important concept. We'll just come to it shortly, right? So Ekaha Atma. There is a non-dual Eka Atma. Now the shift is from saying Atma is Chit Swarupam, etc. We should move to Aham Chaitanya Swarupaha, Aham Swatantraha, Aham Nirgunaha, Aham Nityaha, Aham Sarvagataha, Aham Ekaha, right? Now, this is the most important aspect, right? Now, Atma Ekaha or Atma Advitiyaha, right, is very, very important. And interestingly enough, lot of scientific study is going on in the field of consciousness, right? So, I pulled out all these quotations that Swamiji normally speaks up because unfortunately, groups have a lot of scientists who have a scientific bent of mind, fortunately or unfortunately, but they are used to that way of experimentation in the labs, etc. And here we have Shastram saying something. So, he normally likes to quote from the scientists. So, you might have heard of Erwin Schrödinger. He says, consciousness is never experienced in the plural, only in the singular of which the plural is unknown. There is only one thing and that is what seems to be a plurality and it's merely a series of this different aspects of this one thing produced by deception. The Indian Maya, he says. This is Erwin Schrödinger. Now Max Planck, okay, another well-known scientist, he says, consciousness I regard as fundamental, in his words. I regard matter as a derivative of consciousness. He has actually gone to Gaudapada's Mandukya Karika. I regard matter as a derivative of consciousness and we cannot get behind consciousness and everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing postulates consciousness. This is Max Planck. And similarly, there's a professor, George Wald, right? And he talks about the greatness of Upanishads, right? And he says consciousness itself lies outside the parameters of space and time and therefore would make it beyond reach of science. And he also says it cannot be located, but more it has no location, etc. And there are also people like Einstein, Bohr, Tesla, who were all influenced by Vedanta to some extent, right? This has happened. And most of these people are quantum physicists, right? So, unfortunately, we have to quote science and people, because generally people respect science and they are not aware of, you know, what Vedanta has to offer. So, this is about Atma, what we have seen. The important point that I was talking about before I got into these quotations is Atma Ekaha or non-dual, right? Now, I'm going to talk about how this Atma actually manifests in each of the bodies. Before that, on this slide, I just put together some references, right? Only samples. This is not at all encompassing. And in fact, I should ask pardon to the Shastras for having picked up a few of them and put here, because the entire Veda Antabhaga is only communicating this important, right, very, very important Vedanta axiom, which is Aham Brahmasmi or Tattvamasi. But I just thought I'll pull up a few things. In Mundaka Upanishad, which is the first Upanishad that Swamiji normally starts, we talk about consciousness and, you know, Eka, Sara, Nitya, Satyam, etc., the features. And in Kena Upanishad, we talk about Atma as nothing but an embodiment of consciousness. Lot of explanation is there. In Kathopanishad, what actually survives after death, and then comparing and contrasting original consciousness, Atma, everything is there. In Kaivalya Upanishad, the Chaitanya aspect is dealt with in detail. In Taittiriya Upanishad, Brahmavali, Panchakosha is used for Viveka, and Ananda Atma is explained in great detail. In the last class, somebody also asked me this question. So, in Taittiriya Upanishad, Brahmanandavali, Ananda Atma is completely, you know, analyze. And in Mandukya Upanishad and Karika, Chatushpada Atma Vichara, that is Shariratrayam and Avastatraya Vichara and Shuddha Chaitanyam Atma, these are all described in great length. Chandogya Upanishad chapter 6, so much of Satta aspect has been described. I have not put on Brihadaranyaka Upanishad because it is like a forest and there is so much from it, so I didn't pull out any samples. All the Upanishads talk about different aspects and different prakriyas or methodologies, as we call it. Depending on the kind of person you are and the choice, the acharya may have personal choice. Even in the Smriti Granthas after that, one or more of these prakriyas or methodologies are used, right? It's like exactly, I think I mentioned this in the last class, like going to the summit from various angles. You can go from, say, to Mount Kailash from China, you can go from Tibet, you can go from Nepal, you can go from various paths. So, depending on the acclimatization required and what kind of aspect appeals to them, various Upanishads, various Smriti Granthas have talked about it. So, we generally say the Siddhanta is one, the goal is one, but the methodologies or prakriyas are many, right? Now, I want to actually close today's subject with a very important point which you can dwell, and then, you know, we can talk about it maybe in the class after next, right? So, just to revisit, Atma kaha stula sukshma karana shariraat vyatiriktaha panchakosha titaha san avastatraya sakshi sachidananda swarupaha san yattishtati sa atma. That's what we have studied. So, we have studied that Atma is different from all of this, right? Very, very important. So, just pay attention for a few more minutes here. Now, Atma, the original consciousness, is Ekam, I said, and I also said that each of the Sharira Trayams is blessed by this Atma, the original consciousness. Now, there is an original consciousness. Imagine that the gross body is like a mirror. When I say gross body, it is stula shariram, right? Now, when the original consciousness reflects in the gross body or reflecting medium 3, there is a reflected consciousness which is formed exactly like an image, right? This is just for you to imagine. Please don't give too much weightage to the diagram that I'm showing, because I wanted to explain pictorially. So there is an original consciousness. It's reflection in the gross body or sthula shariram. I've termed this RM3 because it is reflecting medium 3. Generates reflected consciousness RC3 or creates, right, RC3, right? And there is the same OC or original consciousness which is reflecting in the subtle body or sukshma shariram or RM2 called reflected consciousness RC2. Similarly, you have original consciousness original consciousness reflecting in RM1, which is the causal body or karana shariram, giving rise to reflected consciousness RC1. So we have, like, you imagine three different mirrors where there is an image formed, right, from the Atma. This is only for imagination purpose, right? So don't extend it too much, right? And each of these is given a special name. The reflected consciousness associated with the gross body is termed Vishwa. Then the reflected consciousness associated with the sukshma shariram is called Taijasa. And the reflected consciousness associated with the causal body or karana shariram is called Pragna. Now, Vishwa, Taijasa, Pragna together is generally referred as Chidabhasa, right? All three put together generally. And sometimes this whole piece of Vishwa along with the reflecting medium, etc., is referred as Vishwa for convenience, right? That is the sthula shariram along with the reflected consciousness, sometimes referred as Vishwa. But for the purpose of our discussion, we can just note that Jiva is comprised of the sharira trayam plus the corresponding reflected consciousness. We just have names called Vishwa for the reflected consciousness of the sthula shariram, Taijasa for sukshma shariram, and Pragna for karana shariram, right? I have just rearranged the same picture to be represented slightly differently here. Just hold on to this, because this whole picture will get completed by the end of next class, and then maybe the class after that also, right? So we will discuss this in great length afterwards, but I just wanted to leave this thought with you, since I did not want to stop with Atma Ekaha and leave you with a question as to, oh, how is Atma Ekaha but so many Shariram's are there. So this is how it blesses the Shariram. So I just wanted to introduce the subject here, right, and just leave it there. So with this, I will just take questions if you have questions. Yeah. What is the difference between Atman and Atma other than Atman as a root word? Nothing else. That's why I didn't want to get into this, Shobhaji. Somebody has asked this question, right? Now, if I commit sins or do punyam, it is an experience. Am I to disown to know the I? I'm not able to follow this. Maybe the question is not complete, right? If you could retype it, I will definitely answer update it, right? Now, if Atma is part of the universal consciousness, how can your Atma not communicate with mine when both the Atmas are part of different bodies? I hope you got some answer to it a little bit now. We are going to discuss this in detail in the next class. But there are three different reflected consciousness. There is a clear difference between the all-pervading Atma and what is reflected and what is causing the body to be sentient, right? Okay, if I commit sins or do punyam, it is an experience. So am I to disown to know the real I? No. If you, as long the punyams and papams will anyway be there as part of your karma, whatever you are doing, right? Now, in Jiva Ishwara Aikyam as well as law of karma, we will discuss about how you can you know, transcend all of this, but there is nothing called disowning it, right? You to know the real I, you don't have to disown it. We will see how the process works, right? Now, is Turiya the fourth state of experience after Sushupti Avastha, right? Now, we don't call it the fourth state of existence after Sushupti Avastha. Turiya is the awareness of the consciousness. So, we don't call it a fourth state. It is incorrect to refer it as fourth state. In fact, Swamiji's lectures talk about this specifically when he does Mandukya Karika. It is just the awareness of all the other states or the consciousness, awareness, consciousness, right? If there are any more questions, you can definitely, you know, post it and we will answer. From the last weeks also, there were a few questions. Most of them I can only answer, I think, afterwards, but one or two was there on how is Sharanagati different from Shreyas. So I just wanted to make sure that people understood. Shreyas is, as I told you, the ultimate goal. So Sharanagati, that is Moksha, is Shreyas. So Sharanagati will come under only Ishwara, you know, prayer. So it will be either Sakama or Nishkama Puja you will do. But Sharanagati itself means that you are looking at Ishwara or Swargaloka or Brahma Loka or one of the God Lokas, right? So that is how Advaita looks at it. Shreyas is only Moksha, right? And there are questions pertaining to does one's karma end with Pralaya? And there's also another one saying Vedanta says there is no room for fatalism in Hinduism, yet it also says that the future already exists in potential form. So could you please clarify this? These are some questions that I think we have better taken up during the Law of Karma session. So I will respond to these. I have made a note of these and we will make sure that all questions get answered over the course of next 2 to 3 weeks. So if there are no more questions, I think there's nothing else. We can, you know, complete the class. Just let me do the Purna Mada. Purnamad Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Mm-hmm.